He went through to the forward cabins, past the galley, flour and coffee in the floor and canned goods half-crushed and rusting. Ahead, with a stainless steel toilet and sink, the weak sea light fell through the clear-story portholes. Gear scattered everywhere, a May West floating in the dark bilge. He was half expecting some horror, but there was none. The mattress pads in the cabins had been slung into the floor, and bedding and clothing were piled against the wall, everything wet. A door stood open to the locker in the bow, but it was too dark to see inside. He ducked his head and stepped in and felt about. Sea gear piled in the floor. Deep bins with hinged wooden covers. He began to drag everything out and pile it on the tilted bed, blankets, foul weather gear. He came up with a damp sweater and pulled it over his head. He found a pair of yellow rubber sea boots, and he found a nylon jacket, and he zipped himself into that and pulled on the stiff yellow breeches from the sou'wester gear and thumbed the suspenders up over his shoulders and pulled on the boots. Then he went back up on the deck. The boy was sitting as he'd left him, watching the ship. He stood up in alarm, and the man realized that in his new clothes he made an uncertain figure. "It's me," he called. But the boy only stood there, and he waved to him and went below again. In the other stateroom, there were drawers under the berth that were still in place, and he lifted them free and slid them out. Manuals and papers in Spanish, bars of soap, a black leather valise covered in mold with papers inside. He put the soap in the pocket of his coat and stood. There were books in Spanish, strewn across the berth, swollen and shapeless, a single volume wedged in the rack against the forward bulkhead. He found a rubberized canvas sea bag, and he prowled the ship in his boots, pushing himself off the bulkheads against the tilt, the yellow slicker pants rattling in the cold. He filled the bag with odds and ends of clothing. A pair of women's sneakers he thought would fit the boy. A folding knife with a wooden handle. A pair of sunglasses. Still, there was something perverse in his searching. Like exhausting the least likely places first when looking for something lost. Finally, he went into the galley. He turned on the stove. A faint hiss. He turned it off again. He unlatched and raised the hatch to the engine compartment, but it was half-flooded and pitch dark. No smell of gas or oil. He closed it again. There were lockers built into the settees in the cockpit that held cushions, canvas, fishing gear. There was a locker behind the wheel pedestal where he found coils of nylon rope and more rolls of canvas and a toolbox made of fiberglass. He sat in the floor of the cockpit and sorted through the tools. Rusty but serviceable. Pliers, screwdrivers, wrenches. He latched the toolbox shut and stood and looked for the boy. He was huddled in the sand, asleep, with his head on the pile of clothes. He carried the toolbox in and set it on the stove and went forward and made a last tour of the staterooms. Then he set about going through the lockers in the saloon, looking through folders and papers in plastic boxes, trying to find the ship's log. He found a set of china packed away, unused in a wooden crate filled with excelsior. Most of it broken, service for 8, carrying the name of the ship, a gift, he thought. He lifted out a teacup and turned it in his palm and put it back. The last thing he found was a square oak box with dovetailed corners and a brass plate let into the lid. He thought it might be a humidor, but it was the wrong shape, and when he picked it up and felt the weight of it, he knew what it was. He unsnapped the corroding latches and opened it. Inside was a brass sextant, possibly 100 years old. He lifted it from the fitted case and held it in his hand, struck by the beauty of it. The brass was dull, and there were patches of green on it that took the form of another hand that once had held it. But otherwise, it was perfect. He wiped at the verdigris from the plate at the base. Hezenith, London. He held it to his eye and turned the wheel. It was the first thing he'd seen in a long time that stirred him. He held it in his hand, and then he fitted it back into the blue baize lining of the case, and closed the lid and snapped the latches shut, and set it back in the locker, and closed the door.